The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to a Rare Drop podcast. Check us out at raredrop.co.
Hey y'all, I'm Sam, and I'm excited to be back hosting for GCX 2022. Room blocks are still available at the beautiful Rose and Shingle Creek in Orlando, Florida. So book now with our discounted link and stay in the same space as the event so that the fun never has to end. Well, I mean, that really couldn't be more convenient. Go to gcxevent.com/rosen to learn more.
Explore epic sagas with Rare Drop Roleplay. Recap the latest in sports with Overplayed. Unleash your inner hero on comics. Dive into a galaxy far, far away through Star Wars and Scotch. And pick the brains of industry experts on Broman Podcast. Whatever you're looking for, Rare Drop Entertainment has you covered. Check out our full lineup at raredrop.co.
Welcome to episode 58 of Star Wars and Scotch. It's Kevin and Tim.
Hey.
Again.
Hi. As always, I'm sorry if you were expecting someone else to welcome you to Star Wars and Scotch, but surprise, it's Kevin and I.
We should just do that one week.
Oh, just have someone else completely do the opener for Star Wars and Scotch?
Hey, it's Mindy and Ben.
And Paul. Mindy and Paul are going to talk about Star
Wars. And everyone else.
Honestly, if I was to trust anyone at our company when it comes to Star Wars stuff, it would probably be Mindy.
Yeah.
She's kind of a nerd.
She's not kind of a nerd. She is a nerd.
So, well, I mean, like I was trying to be nice.
She'll embrace that. She would love it.
You're a nerd. I feel like now, Kevin, it's okay to be a nerd. I'm like, that's fine.
It is.
It's very acceptable.
It was never, when we were growing up, it was always viewed
as very derogatory.
Yeah. And then I think video game culture is actually what altered that.
I have to agree. When all of my college colleagues and all of the fellow students were playing Flappy Bird during lectures, I think we were all nerds at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, it was for Star Wars specifically, since we're here, it was definitely the prequels and then the games that came out, like Shadows of the Empire and like that. Because we would talk about that stuff in college and high school.
And look at us now. Now we have a podcast. We're talking about Star Wars. I went onto a Star Wars tweet yesterday, and I watched someone just get lit up by High Republic fans, which was hilarious.
Was it the one I commented on?
Yeah, it was the one where guy was like, imagine Star Wars ruining a whole other thing. And everyone's like, F you, this is great.
Tell me you haven't consumed any of the material without telling me you exactly. haven't consumed any of the material. Fucking these fanboys,
charlatans,
are the worst.
Well, there's not a lot this week when
we could talk about that picture in that tweet.
But yeah, there's definitely lots that we can still talk about, Kevin. So I'm super excited about that.
So Star Wars tweeted out that the conclusion of Phase One of the High Republic begins January 2022. That is a full sentence, because it's like the conclusion of Phase One.
So what does it
begins
mean?
That's the next novel.
So yeah, okay. So then, what can we go back and talk about their overall phases for the High Republic?
Yeah, yeah. Let's bring that up.
Because honestly, I don't remember. Right. So Phase One was kind of just like the introduction to the universe, right? And we've met a lot of characters. Avar Chris.
Phase one is Light of the Jedi.
Okay.
Phase two is Quest of the Jedi.
Okay.
And phase three is Trials of the Jedi.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, so Light of the Jedi, it all starts out really pretty, right? The first novel's great. After the fact, we get over the planetary genocide, which is an awesome way to start out any story. Authors, if you're listening, please continue to open up your sci-fi books with planetary genocide, because it really hooks me. Really enjoyed that part. But, you know, like we saw the Light of the Jedi begins to fade. A lot of these Jedi, Elzar Mann starts to feel it.
He starts seeing these visions.
Loden Greatstorm starts to feel it. I mean, all these Jedi are feeling this heaviness. You know, it's not all happy go lucky, frolicking through the Force flowers and being all, you know, happy and hippies. They know something's bad, and then all of a sudden we move these Sith statues on this eerie space station, and then the Drangir show up.
Ooh.
Right? And so we know that we know the Sith are terrified of these things. The Drangir show up, and then they start a universal conquest. Or I guess it really just a galactic conquest to eat everything.
Meat.
So things get really worse. I mean, like, how many more trials do these guys need to go through?
I appreciate the Drangir in the comics, because they really dove into what they are, where they came from. Like, literally one of the frames in I forget which comic, it's one of the Marvel ones. Showcases ancient Sith, like, with them and utilizing them and locking them away. So I hope they expand on that. I hope the Drangir gets stronger and cause more of a problem for the Jedi. I'm truthfully not through all the comics, so that could be pretty much set up.
Well, if we're holding close to the books, they are kind of like defeated.
No, they're
question
kind of
mark?
like
they're kind of just like in hiding. Like, where, like, what are they? What are they doing?
No, because in the last book, Avar is off world.
Yeah.
The one after, she's off world fighting the Drangir.
Right. But they start off the Lorna D book with saying how they've defeated the Drangir.
They do. So they're probably in dormant then, or
that's what I'm trying to figure out, is like they were in celebration. It was about like what's the Lorna D book picks up 3 months after the Nihil attack on the fair.
It's gonna jump around a lot.
Yeah, so it jumps around a lot. But like that opening statement, it was Avar Chris, and then she, or it was one of the Jedi that were on the ship, and they're like, you know, we've defeated the Drangir. And so it was just like, I was like, wait a second. What happened? So is that going to be a part of the ending of phase one? Is that what that picture is, with Starlight Beacon like blowing up? Do you think that's the Drangir, or do you think that's going to be the Nihil? You think that's going to be like
Marcian
showing up?
I think that's Marcian's revenge.
Yeah.
They're building up to Marcian being the focus. I think the phase two will begin to flesh out the Drangir again and bring them back into the fold, because during Republic Fair, they claim they're fighting a war on two fronts, one against the Nihil and one against the Drangir.
Right.
So I think things need to get worse and get harder. So the destruction of Starlight Beacon seems to be the which we're not speculating that. It's literally in the image, because they did a movie-esque poster for the conclusion of phase one, and Starlight Beacon is literally on fire.
It's exploding. But I thought we confirmed that Starlight Beacon was still around even during the Galactic Empire.
It is, but that doesn't mean it can't get destroyed and rebuilt.
Oh, you think it's gonna go through a rebuild phase?
Like Death Star 2.
Well, I know they were making other beacons. They were making other Starlight beacons, or whatever like that you classify that type of base
that
as.
That beacon though is referenced in current content. Well, I should say.
Right.
Current,
they're saying the star they're
Skywalker
saying Starlight
era.
Beacon in general is referenced during was it Dr. Aphra, I think, had mentioned it. Someone ends up mentioning it, or it was in the Kylo book. One of them. Anyways, the lineup that they have for all of the comics going forth, because we're looking now at January 2022. So this is the beginning of the new line of comics, the next, you know, the ending of phase one. And there's a lot. And what's cool is that they showcase some current stuff that ties into things like the Galactic Star Cruiser, which Kevin, unfortunately, was unable to get us on.
I either got a busy signal or I had to hang up after 5 hours on hold.
But they've got this. They have an actual there's going to be a 5 episode comic.
Okay, hold on. Before you go there.
Okay.
I have the titles of the upcoming books. So Tempest Runner just came out. Edge of Balance is the anime. I'm waiting till that's complete before I buy it because they're releasing it episodically, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Showdown at the Fair is the next children's book. And it shows Buriaga at the fair fighting the Nihil. So that's for the little kiddos. Mission to Disaster is the next. Are they calling them preteen? What are they calling those?
They were just like young adult novels or something like that.
So I think that follows Vernestra and what's her face. I can't remember her name. And then the novel for January is called The Fallen Star. And it's literally all of them standing in front of rubble and flames.
A fallen star would sound like a fallen starlight beacon.
Yeah, like I can't tell. I think that's Elzar on the cover. It's either that or Stellan. But because I can't really tell them apart because books.
We also
and then the next one after that is called The Midnight Horizon.
Oh.
And it just has two Jedis with their cloaks up walking and there's some sort of spire behind them and their lightsabers are out.
Ooh, I wonder if we go back to Black Spire Outpost.
That'd be interesting.
I mean, like it would make sense that Black Spire Outpost is, well, the Black Spire that the outpost was built around had been there for a long time. When Thrawn and Vader went there, when they found Black Spire Outpost, they had made comments on how the spire itself and like the natural structures that were built had been there for a long time since their Old Republic, or even before that.
It does kind of look like that behind them, but I can't really tell.
Star Wars, Lucas, Disney, they have a huge hard on for Batuu and for Black Spire Outpost because they spent so much money on that when they built it, and so they continuously start to loop things in. To that point, on top of Kevin announcing the titles for the books, we've also got a bunch of new comics coming out as well. The first one on StarWars.com, the new Marvel comic is called The Halcyon Legacy, and it's a 5-episode comic book, and it covers the actual ship or the ship class that you get to go on with the Galactic Star Cruiser. Like, so this is tying you in. This is building lore behind this theme park attraction. And what this says on the website is, this is the voyages of the greatest of all Star Cruisers. As the legendary Halcyon embarks on a momentous cruise, the ship heads towards a confrontation with the First Order. Okay, so that's already setting up the scene as to what happens when you go on the ship, because we've looked at the itinerary for the ship when you go, and that's something that happens. You actually get boarded by the First Order.
I hope it happens during dinner and it's like completely unscheduled.
Yeah,
it's like we're just sitting there eating and like ha ha ha, and they're like, Hux walks in. This ship is now under control of the First Order. Like when he does that freak out thing.
I'm right.
He's
here.
Like, I'm in charge.
Looking for General Hux. this is Hux.
I don't give a shit what anyone says. I still think that's one of the funniest moments in the sequel trilogy.
It was so good.
I'm the spy.
But it says, but what secret from the High Republic era can help the passengers and crew all these years later? Remember, this is so they. It looks like Buriaga, the Wookiee Jedi that has been like, he's grown now. He's not just like the quiet little scared guy. He looks big. He looks tough. He has a High Republic lightsaber in his hand. You can tell because it's medieval looking. It's got the hand guard on the hilt. It's really long. It looks like a very elegant lightsaber. And it says, and it asks, how did Jedi Nibs and Buri fend off a Nihil attack on one of the ship's first ever voyages? What?
I wonder, okay, because we know how Disney, remember when we talked about the Sith Journal that was only available in the one store in LA?
Uh-huh.
That like decoded the message from the last movie.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if there'll be Easter eggs from Buriaga and Nibs fight with the Nihil on Halcyon when you're there.
Be, or what if they're just because they're so old? What if they're like actually, like it says they're on the ship. So
Buryaga could be there.
So Buryaga could, I mean, like, so that means that they were alive during episode 8. Like, I'm so confused and so intrigued at the same time. Well, I'm very, very excited. Alive. I don't know. It says, and how did Jedi Nibs and Bury fend off a Nihil attack on one of the ships? Oh, so this ship's been around for a long time then.
Yeah, it says like 300 years. Yeah, Nib's a human. Nib is not
alive.
Okay,
there's no way. Okay, so that's what I was trying to figure out. So that's kind of cool that there's a really neat tie in there.
Buryaga could be.
He could be. As a Wookiee, he could live a long, long time. The next the next comic that they're announcing is going to be the backstory for Marcian Row. This is Star Wars The High Republic, Eye of the Storm.
That cover is incredible.
It's so incredible. So for those that are listening, paint the picture. It is Marcian Row standing there with his helmet in his hand, the Eyes helmet in his hand, and he has the yellow lightsaber in his right hand. So left hand, he's holding the helmet down to his knee. The right hand he has held up with a lightsaber kind of pointing up at an angle. And I would assume that's Loden Greatsword's lightsaber, correct?
Yes.
And so it says, and so the description for Eye of the Storm number one is, in which we reveal the true origins of Marcian Row, the Eye of the Nihil, and sworn enemy of the Jedi Order, in which the lie at the heart of his family is exposed, in which the doom of the High Republic begins with a single kill.
Would you assume that the background is once again the Golimar and Ice Flats on Rystan?
I think so. I would assume so. It seems like there's a lot of origin with Marcian. We learn that in the last book. We learn that there's a lot of family ties to this, and his family is old. We know his family is old. It's ancient, and there's a lot of blood magic here. And so I'm really, really intrigued by Marcian and knowing that this comic is going to tell us everything we want to know, because you and I have constantly been like, what is he? Like, is he a Force user? Is he just like, was he Jedi? Is he Sith? Like, where does he fall into all this? Because we know he's Force sensitive to a certain degree. We know he wields a lightsaber with great ease. It reminds me a lot of Rey when she first picks up Luke's lightsaber. It was just an extension of her. Like, she felt very natural holding it. So I feel like Marcian is kind of like in that same boat. He's just a very, very strong natural Force user.
I'm curious if, because Marcian, we still don't know what his race is.
No.
I'm curious if this will begin to clear that up. And again, Marcian's adopted into the Nihil, so Askar is not actually his father.
Right.
So I wonder if Kufa is actually his cousin.
Oh.
The old lady we meet on Rystan.
Didn't he call her his aunt?
No, it's his cousin.
Oh, cousin? I could have sworn he called her an aunt.
Yeah,
cousin.
Female individual who is a cousin of Eye the Nihil, Marcian Row. Marcian also just lost his biggest tool to control the Nihil, which was the paths, but now he has the leveler, so I'm wondering if he's just going to go intimidation route.
Well, he also pissed off all of the Tempest Runners. So
he did, but you need to finish Lorna D before we continue this conversation.
Okay, fair. after that one, they show off Star Wars The High Republic Trail of Shadows. This is going
this
to be
is the murder mystery.
So this is the murder
Marvel.
Mystery. This is number 4 out of 5.
So pause for a second.
Sure.
So the monster behind him.
Yes.
We know about the leveler.
Okay, so just for those that are listening. This one is a Jedi kneeling. He's got his robes on, and behind him, he kind of has like this yellow aura around him. And behind him is this purple monster. Very, very large. Not a Rancor. At first, I thought that's what it was. But when you start looking at it, it has a mane. It has muscle that's exposed from its jowls and has big claws and horns.
So I came across this article on Screen Rant, and I never put two and two together. But, Tim, do you remember in the KOTOR games when you would go to Korriban? And they would tell in the first game, they tell you about it. You can counter it again in the second game. They talk about these beasts that suck the force out of things.
I feel you and I have had this discussion before.
So they're called, hold on. The name is so hard to pronounce. It's like Terran Tatek or something. I'm trying to find it in this article. Terran Tatek. So they talk about them in KOTOR. So people now are connecting and saying, is the leveler a Terran Tatek from KOTOR, or based on that or descendant of it, something similar, because it seems to act in the same manner.
I mean, these things are terrifying, but they're not big enough to be a leveler.
And they do reference, if you scroll down, the comic that you just referenced.
Interesting.
Yeah,
so all of the reference images and stuff that you see on like KOTAR, it's very, very different looking. Not to say that it couldn't be it.
The leveler lay dormant for untold millennia until it was awoken by the Nihil. There are some differences. Apparently the leveler consumes the midichlorians from a Jedi, not their blood, but these seem like logical extensions of the idea.
Because the whole idea is they're like force suppressors. They like just shut down everything. They shut down all force users around them, right?
Well, they're saying that they actually suck midichlorians out of
people. Does that disable, so that just like that completely just it nullifies the Jedi's ability to have any type of communication with the force?
At minimum, temporarily.
And that's the whole thing. We don't know the biological properties of like midichlorians. Like, does your body continuously regenerate them over time, or
does the force regenerate them the more you tap in?
Yeah, I mean, like, are you like a woman like with eggs? Like, are you just you are born with a set amount and that's it? Yeah, like I don't know.
I like this theory. It's fun. It connects a lot of dots, and it would again link back to the remake of the game. Maybe there'll be a hint to the Terran Tatex being called something on Korriban, because Star Wars loves to use two names for things sometimes. Sure. And maybe Marchion's people got this, and that is the leveler to them.
Sure.
So I like the connection. I think it's fun, and it does connect to the comic. I'm sorry, I'm missing Trail of Shadows, the Marvel one, the murder mystery.
Yep.
So, this is where Star Wars is fun, and they connect dots all around, and this is where we can speculate and be crazy. So go nuts. Continue with the comics.
Sure. We've got Star Wars The High Republic number 13. It's going to be coming out, The Battle for No Space. Since Marcian Rowe attacked the Republic Fair on Valo, everything has been leading to this moment. Now it's the Jedi's turn to strike the heart of the Nihil. Avar Chris versus Lorna D. Jedi versus Nihil. Jedi versus Jedi. A line is about to be crossed. We also have the Crimson Rain. This is number 2 out of 5. I had no idea that this comic was out, and I'm just... ultimately intrigued. I have no idea what this comic is about, but the cover art is really interesting because it's two gun wielders, both, and they have guns in their right hands and blades in their left, and they are surrounded by Imperial guards, like the Emperor's guards, the guys that you see wearing red, and they have got the lances and everything. Like, these guys are surrounded by a legion of Imperial guards, and it says what does it say? It says, the assassins. Kira sends two killers to do what they do best, to continue with her plan to plunge the galaxy into chaos. The relentless force blinded Ochi of Bestoon and the mysterious unstoppable Death Stick each have a target. Nothing will get in their way.
The one has a sword in their hand. The one in the purple.
Yeah, yeah, she's got a sword. He's got this like kunai looking thing. Very, very interesting. I don't know. Do you know anything about Crimson Rain, Kevin? Have you read any of these comics yet?
No, I believe it's Skywalker era though.
Yeah. Well, I would assume. Well, I mean, of course, it's the Imperial Guard, but I want to know who these people are, and like, were they sent to kill the Emperor? Like, I would assume so, since the Imperial Kira. Guard are on them like mosquitoes.
It's Kira from Solo.
Oh,
it sends two killers to do what they do best.
Oh. So, yeah. Oh, well, but I mean, like, she must have been hiding in the shadow. Oh, OK. Now I'm very, very intrigued. Yeah, this is Crimson Dawn. This is Crimson Dawn.
Yeah, they made a big point about saying Kira was going to return in the comics and possibly in TV movie stuff soon.
Oh, that's so Kira, dope.
There's a chance that Kira shows up in Mandalorian. Think about it.
I didn't know that was this Kira. That's so exciting. Well, now I have to read these. Okay.
But think about Kira showing up in Mandalorian.
It wouldn't be, well, it all depends on what happens to her in the comics. If she dies in this comic, then
Crimson Dawn's still around. So yeah, obviously if she dies, that kills that theory. But Crimson Dawn's still around when Mando's doing his thing.
Yeah.
If anything, the cartels are probably stronger.
Oh, they're much stronger now with the Empire gone. So. Bounty Hunters is now on episode 20, which is just pretty intense. I didn't read any of the Bounty Hunter stuff. Have you?
So the Bounty Hunters is kind of, I don't want to say anthology, it's not the right word, but it follows different ones. So you can read them, you know, two here, three here, because they follow different Bounty Hunters. So yes, episode 20, but keep in mind, it's not one linear story. Yes, the stories connect, but, you know, Bosk is one, Boba's one, IG is one, so... They're different bounty hunters, but they do connect in different ways. So
Dr. Aphra is going to be getting another episode. This is episode 18. I really like the Dr. Aphra book, so I feel like I should go and read the comics. This one's called Conjurations. The Strange Ritual Murders on the Rise. Dr. Aphra and Santa Staros hunt for the Ascendant artifacts. Their leads keep turning up dead and they're running out of time. They'll have to delve deep into the secrets of the ancient tech cult if they plan to catch the killer. That's pretty cool, dude. And that's a cool thing that's about fun. Dr. Aphra is that she, like I said, when I read through the book or listened to the book, it was very Indiana Jones-esque. So knowing that she's dealing with like ancient tech stuff is really cool. I'm gonna have to go and read these because she's such a cool character, and I would love for her to get a live action show or movie. I think she's a really cool character that a lot of people are starting to really gravitate towards. We need more of that. We need more of like those heroic, like non-force users that are just like running amok in the like, and she's neutral. She's not like good or bad. She's just in it for herself. She's another like Han Solo. I think that's why I like her character so much. She has no allegiance to anyone. And then the last comic on the Star Wars website is Star Wars Episode 21. This is called Stranded on a Star Destroyer. After a mission gone wrong, ace rebel pilot Shara Bay, Poe Dameron's mother, was left for dead aboard the Tarkin's Will, a huge Star Destroyer. Shara survived and has been hiding deep inside the massive ship ever since, evading Commander Zara's notice. But her time is up.
The art on this is awesome because the rubble looks like Vader's head in the top left.
Yeah, yeah, it's Vader's helmet, and then there's a stormtrooper with a flashlight out over a pile of junk and other stormtroopers looking around like he's looking for Shara Bay, which is pretty cool. Knowing that she's Poe Dameron's mother, that kind of gives us a little bit more backstory to Poe's character, who is kind of just like thrown at us in episode 7. We're like, who the heck is this ace pilot? So
the only one they didn't mention here is the IDW adventures. Ty Yurik, who we meet in what was the last book called? Rising Storm. Rising Storm? Now it's gonna bother me.
No, it's Rising Storm.
Just making sure. Okay, good. Rising Storm.
Yeah.
We meet Ty Yurik, who's a force user, former Jedi. Elzar likes her, but she reveals that she's like a bounty / monster hunter. So the monster of Temple Peak actually follows one of her adventures, an IDW comic, and it looks cool. I haven't bought it yet. I was waiting for them to complete it so I could read it all in one shot. But I read the preview for this one, and it looks fun. It looks like a new Star Wars monster that we haven't seen before. So there's that one as well.
So as Kevin and I have been kind of scouring the interwebs for some Star Wars news. It's a little dry, but I found something interesting, and I don't know if we've talked about this, and this might be a little bit a little fun for us as far as the theory crafting, but I'd love to hear your take on this, Kevin. This is from Screen Rant. Star Wars acolytes have been explained. Star Wars finally explains a sequel era Sith cult. Lucasfilm's new Secrets of the Sith book purports to be a collection of notes from Emperor Palpatine himself, and they include his reflections on the acolytes of the beyond. Not all who worship the dark side are strong with the Force. Some are merely fanatics who understand that the dark side is one true path to victory.
Which they touch on them in the Aftermath books.
They do.
In one of the interludes.
They do.
They're a few of them, because they're hunting for Vader's lightsaber as like a relic.
So what they say here is that The article starts off by saying a Star Wars tie-in is finally explained to Sith era cult that operated in the shadows during the sequel era. In 2015, Lucasfilm launched the Aftermath trilogy, a series of books that explored the time period between the Return of the Jedi and the Force Awakens. Books actually set up Emperor Palpatine's return years before the Rise of Skywalker finally delivered onto the concept. It also introduced a mysterious Force cult called the Acolytes of the Beyond, who initially seemed much more important to the overcharging Star Wars franchise than they ultimately proved to be. A dark side cult that flourished after the Battle of Endor, the Acolytes of the Beyond were formed by Imperial loyalists such as Yup Tashu, who believed that they were serving the Emperor and preparing the way for his return. Members of the Acolytes of the Beyond were not Force-sensitive themselves, but they had an obsession with collecting Sith artifacts. So we meet them in Aftermath. Like Kevin said, they're hunting for Vader's relics, looking for his lightsaber, looking for his kyber crystal. We end up learning more about them as the end of Aftermath, the vault opens, and we see the Emperor's been collecting a momentous amount of relics. There's just so many things that he's been collecting and studying and whatnot. But the note from... So this is taken from Secrets of the Sith, and this is a journal entry from the Emperor himself. Kevin, would you like to
give me some background music?
Ooh. Not all who worship the dark side are strong with the Force. Some are merely fanatics who understand that the dark side is the one true path to victory, even if it is a path they are not capable of walking themselves.
Again, keep on doing this. One such group of adherents was the Acolytes of the Beyond. They believe that the Force is akin to a river, and that the dark side is the only means of changing its currents. To alter the future in their favor, they devoted themselves to gathering Sith Arcana, destroying the objects, and releasing the dark energies within as a sacrificial offering to the ancient Sith lords. Later, the Acolytes wisely decided that these irreplaceable artifacts should be revered and not destroyed. Led by a number of extreme loyalists, including my former Imperial advisor, Yupe Tashu, I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that correctly, the Acolytes relentlessly pursued Sith secrets, fueling their unwavering devotion to my cause.
Now, we have a decent amount of background on the Sith Eternal, who's the other cult that lives on Exegol.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if there's any crossover that's coming.
Okay, so there are two different cults that live on Exegol that serve the Emperor?
In Legends,
okay,
there's a ton of cults for all sorts of things. The Sith Eternal, linking for you, are the ones we know on Exegol. They have a history. Vader encountered them at one point in the comics. And then there's the Acolytes of the Beyond that seem to form after the Battle of Endor. So I'm wondering if there's any crossover down the road.
So the Acolytes of the Beyond and the Sith Eternal formed around the same time, though?
No, the Sith Eternal exists during the Imperial era. The Acolytes of the Beyond seem to form after the Battle of Endor.
I see. Okay, so the Acolytes, they were on the mission of bringing the Emperor back. They're just following the way of the Sith, right?
No, the Sith Eternal are the ones that are preserving the Emperor.
Oh, wait, but he's talking about the Acolytes from the Beyond, I thought.
No, if you read the Sith Eternal resorted to science in their efforts to preserve the life of Darth Sidious. You know.
Okay, but the things that I was just talking about were the Acolytes of the Beyond, though, right?
Yeah, I linked both for you. Yeah. They're two different cults. That's what I'm saying. Is there any crossover down the road between the two before the Battle of Exegol?
It's very confusing.
I mean, they're different cults that kind of do different things, but they have similar missions. So I'm curious what that looks like. Because when I had read Aftermath for the first time, which I'm still not done with the last book, it's on pause for Lorna D and now Ronin, as they say in the audiobook. Ronin.
Oh boy, here we go.
Ronin. So I read that as like, oh, I guess this links to the cult on Exegol. You know, they're looking for Vader's lightsaber. They're probably gathering Sith relics. at some point, either they know the Emperor's alive or this was part of the Emperor's plan, which that seems the more likely one because he's always 10 steps ahead of everyone else. Now I'm reading this and I realize it's two different organizations. So I'm curious, do they interact? Do they hate each other? Like what?
Yeah.
You know, they have to know the other exists. It's you know, it's a big galaxy, but you both worship the dark side. So I don't know.
So
I'm curious.
And then apparently Secrets of the Sith, the book, is written shortly before Rey arrived on Exegol. So that's interesting. So it seems like it was kind of like just like thrown together because the Emperor knew it was coming.
Maybe. There's a quote in here too from Damarik Quinn. I don't know who that is, to Kylo Ren.
Mm-hmm.
Says, forgive me, sir, but these allies on Exegol, they sound like occult conjurers and soothsayers.
Ooh.
I like that line. I want to learn more about these cults. But anyway, back to Acolytes of the Beyond and Acolyte. The only reason I'd say no on that is because it literally says here that they form during the Battle of Endor, yeah, after the Battle of Endor.
I don't think the Acolytes of the Beyond are going to be the acolytes that we end up meeting in the show.
I would say that the Sith Eternal has actually more of a background for the acolyte to join that. Now, sure. Okay, so hear me out on this, and this is kind of on the fly, but I've always believed this. I have said many times that the Jedi have encountered Sith over the time that they say we haven't seen a Sith in 1,000 years or something. That they 100% have, but they keep it on lock because they don't want young Padawans being like, oh, there's Sith out there.
Yeah.
So I think they keep it a secret. So what if a cult that maybe becomes Sith Eternal, becomes Acolytes, whatever they may be, there's got to be cults out there, right?
I mean,
we know the Night Sisters are out there. We know that there's other Force users in the galaxy that use it for different reasons. So there's got to be cults out there that still worship at minimum the dark side, if not the Sith. What if this acolyte from the end of the High Republic is probably 99.9% chance someone we have met in the books already? Like, do you not deny that?
Oh, shit.
Like, it could be fucking Bell for all we know.
Could you imagine if it was Bell Zatifar that ends up being the acolyte?
Well, they're really bringing us in and getting us attached to these characters. And what does Star Wars like to do? They like to break that in half at some point and be like, ah, ha, ha. So, you know, killing Han Solo, burying our queen. So it's more... Who? That's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling it has to do with the low-hanging fruit is Elzar, but I feel like that's too obvious.
I mean, but it makes sense though. He is the one that has been pulled so deep down the rabbit hole already.
But he's also making concessions because he's seeing what happens to the Jedi.
Yeah.
And then Skeer had his little dance with the dark side. So I don't know. I think it's someone we already know and have met. And I have a feeling it's going to lead to one of these cults at some point that worship the dark side. Because where are you going to get your information from? Obviously, you could go on a search around the galaxy for, you know, codex and things like that and whatnot. But I have a feeling it's A, someone we know, and B, it's going to be somehow linked to one of these, maybe an earlier version of it under a different name, if you will.
Yeah.
But something that links back to these. Fuck, man, we could end up on Exegol in that show.
I think Exegol deserves to have more of it explained and just given just an actual presence. Like, it feels like such an important planet. And again, like, what if it's tied to the Starforge? And like, what if this planet is why was it so important in episode 9? We've never really heard of it before then. Like, there was no explanation anywhere else of what this thing was. And it becomes this moment, like this monumental icon in all of that movie. You're continuously like going back to Exegol. You get to see that it's deep in the dark side as Ben lands and the thing opens up and he walks down and then it's all steampunky down there and there's dead stuff and decaying matter. And it's just like, it's gross and scary and it's really dark side and they don't really touch on it. So I think Exegol deserves it.
You have to go back to the concept art, and some of which kind of made it into the movies, but was never really addressed. All of the ancient Sith are on the walls there, and there's statues of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ones we know, Bane, Revan, all of Malak, they're all there. Darth Nihilus, they're all there. So that canonizes a lot of it. But also that means that the Emperor Palpatine is not the first person to visit Exegol
no.
as a Sith. So there's tons of history. So I have a feeling Acolyte will take us there. And I have a feeling if it is the Starforge, that at some point in those games, you know, Revan will be like, or Malak will be like, we'll call this place Exegol or something like that, you know? And then we'll be like, oh, shit! Just do the freak out thing. So I'm with you. I am excited that the High Republic is finally getting into that mysticism and that creepy shit
yep.
that lurks behind the, you know, the... Oh, we're using the Force with cool lightsabers.
No, no, no. That's the dark stuff that's meant for kids. The Exegol stuff and like all of like the really cool dark stuff that the High Republic is doing is meant for us. Like it's meant for the adults who are still Star Wars fans that want to know like the really creepy stuff that's under the bed.
Yeah, that's you know, and the Leveler I think is a great example of these unknown things, but things that are slightly familiar that we're like,
Agreed.
So, yeah. I don't think Acolyte links back to Acolytes of the Beyond. It's a great thing. It might. It could. The door is open because there's really no history before that. I would think a link to the Sith Eternal is way more palatable based on the current information that we have.
Yeah, and there's still so many things. Like, how did all the Acolytes end up on Exegol? How did they get there? Like, where did all the Imperial officers come from? How did the Star Destroyers get there? Like, well, that's more of what I want to know about.
The earliest history we have, I don't know where this comes from, but it's on Wikipedia, so I'm going to assume that Mr. Woodhouse would vouch for it.
Okay.
By the time of the Galactic Empire, the Sith Eternal had settled at the Sith Citadel on Exegol. That's the beginning of this.
Say that one more time.
By the time of the Galactic Empire,
yep.
the Sith Eternal had settled at the Sith Citadel on Exegol.
Oh.
Meaning they've been around.
Yeah.
And it would make sense because, again, pulling from Legends and pulling from a game like SWTOR, when you go to Malachor and they design the temples just like they do in episodes 4 and 5,
yeah,
where they leave from, those are ancient Sith temples. You knew that, right?
I do now.
The Republic bases are in Legends lore. I'm not saying canon because I don't know if they've made that transition. Those are supposed to be Sith temples. From the ancient Sith, from the race of Sith, not even the dark side, the users, the red skinned right. Sith,
mm-hmm.
they had what was called the Masasi Warriors.
That's what it was. Yep.
The Masasi Warriors were like these hulked out Sith.
Yep.
And you go there in the game and you fight them and uncover all these really dark Sith secrets and shit that happened on Malachor, which is just really cool. But there's cults there. And that's also, here's another Easter egg for you. That is also where they train the Imperial Guards, is on Malachor. There's a hole in the middle of the planet. There's this big temple, and that's where the guards undergo their trials in the dark side.
I mean, so like the Masasi are canon. You know, they actually have like canonical entries. Yeah. Like it's on Wikipedia. The Masasi were a species who lived on Yavin 4, the fourth moon of Yavin Prime, thousands of years before the Imperial era.
Oh, it wasn't Malachor, it was Yavin. I'm sorry.
I knew what you meant. They built enormous stone temples on the moon for unknown purposes. It was believed that the Masasi may have been a slave race enthralled. And so that is true. The Masasi, they were a warrior class that, because the Sith themselves, the Sith were more like Darth Plagueis in the sense where they weren't as like strong. They were just knowledgeable. They were powerful, but they were enslaving other. Star Wars seems to do this a lot. They like to enslave others to them. Like the bad guys always enslave others and then make them do their bidding. And so the Masasi end up getting hauled off by the Sith and then they're sent off to go fight their wars.
The Empire is always, no matter, and the Sith are always framed from real world. Empires, if you will.
Yes.
So a lot of the, you know, obviously their uniforms are very World War II German-esque. Yes,
very German Nazi, for sure.
You know, the way they run their operation is very ancient Egypt with, you know, the Jewish people and whatnot. So it's all modeled after that. And that's why they continue the you know, this is the Empire. This is what they do. This is how they get to the point where they are before they collapse. Republic pops up. Republic makes all of the democratic mistakes, if you will, that always get them in trouble and corruption and then, you know, rinse and repeat. And that's what makes the Old Republic so great, is that there is Empire space and Republic space in the Old Republic. Yeah. They are two major forces, and it's the only time that I know of in the Star Wars universe where the two are at odds with each other. That's what makes it fun. And then one is backed by the Sith and the other is backed by the Jedi. You know, Old Republic, it's the Eternal Emperor, the one who came before. You know, and he just consumes new bodies. Yeah. And then if you really get into SWTOR, he's also living a double life in another galaxy with a whole other use of force users who believe in justice, not light and dark, which that's a whole other nut to crack that we're not doing today.
No, I like that. Yeah, we should. I like him.
He literally has a whole other family, Tim. He has three kids and a wife in another galaxy. And the Dark Council constantly, when you're playing through the playthrough, is like, the Emperor hasn't been seen in years and blah, 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 blah. You finally see him if you do the Jedi Knight storyline.
Uh-huh.
This is what's great about SWTOR. All eight storylines interact with each other. And unless you play all eight, you do not get the full picture as to what the hell is going on.
Oh, my God. That's so grindy.
So in the Jedi Knight one, you actually encounter him. And he's voiced by the guy that played Hellraiser in the movies.
Ooh.
Yeah. So he has that voice and he talks to you like this. He's like, you are an insignificant nothing. So the Eternal Emperor, and then you kill him, and then you go down, you find out all this other shit.
Okay.
So, I mean, you're a Jedi Knight, Tim. Come on. And he doesn't actually die because his spirit keeps taking over body after body after body. So, you know, taking all that into consideration and looking at that, Acolyte is going to open so many doors to this mystic side. A lot of the stuff that the Star Wars fanboys have been crying for that existed in Legends, you know, the conceptualization of things like, you know, do we get to meet? Here's another one for you with the Acolyte. Do we meet the mother, the son, and the not the mother, the mother's Avalok, the father, the son, and the daughter again at some point?
Oh,
you know,
I really hope so. That was such a cool thing to introduce in Clone Wars and then in Rebels again. And the way that we end with Rebels, with, like, you know, you constantly talk about the Force Veil and the ability to potentially influence the past and change time. There's a lot of that mystic force stuff that was showcased in a very, very quick and brief way that still kind of bugs me, because it's like it's just like Marvel. It would be like if Marvel introduced Kang and then the multiverse and all that stuff, and they did it in 30 seconds and then just like never talked about it again.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I feel right now. And it's really been frustrating to continue to support something that has not been around for, what, like 3 years now? Has it been like 3-ish years since Rebels finished up?
Yeah.
Something like that. So it's just like, man, there's a big chunk that is just like sitting there. And are they holding on to it for a rainy day, or are they really trying to figure out how to build this new world?
What the fanboys don't want to acknowledge is that it took 30 years to get Star Wars where it was prior to Disney purchasing it.
Sure.
And that's the reason Disney purchased it, because it had this rich IP that would feed. Again, Bob Iger, being the visionary that he was, he knew that once Game of Thrones came out,
yeah,
I think everyone realized that people want to live in universes, yeah, and they want to consume content from various mediums in said universe. Disney went out and bought the two most family-friendly universes they could find, mm-hmm, where they could tell these really, really dark stories for adults,
yeah,
and keep everything light for the kids. And they all exist in the same place.
Yeah.
And that is why Star Wars is where it's at. But people don't want to acknowledge that prior to that was 30 fucking years of storytelling that got us to where we are.
Well,
where,
it was,
you know, again, go ahead.
It was to your point, the storytelling though was extremely convoluted. It was disjointed. And that was like, and that's the hard part to really wrap your head around, is that it was so cluttered. It was cluttered storytelling, and that's where I'm still, like, you and I talked about this morning, it's like I can't enjoy it because it's not canon. Like, I have a hard time enjoying that stuff, but you love that. You love, like, all the different stories that go all over the place, because they all end up coming back to the main story at the end.
They also drop Easter eggs. You know, we had joked about Ronin at the gym this morning. Ronin's cool because it's exploring a side of Star Wars that, you know, may never be canon, but it's still interesting, and it draws from source material. I still have no idea what era Ronin takes place in, but little things that they figured out, you know, in the Visions episode, when he pulls the lightsaber out of the scabbard, you're like, oh, well, that's really like cliche samurai move. Well, the reason he does it, they explain it away in the book, is that his lightsaber's broken and he actually can't turn it off. So that is why he has the scabbard, is to keep the energy field inside.
That's really
there.
Cool, though.
And that's why he can take it out like that.
Yeah.
So, but it sets the tone for the future. And you never know when Disney's like, you know what?
Let's bring out a samurai Jedi. Let's just bring him out.
Well,
they keep on laying into it. Like, so I was actually, while you were talking, I was on the Star Wars website and look, the Bring Home the Bounty. I was like, wait, they're doing it every week. Well, week two has been announced. And one of the items for week two is the Temashi Nation's Ronin, Mandalorian, and Grogu set. And it's literally Mando in Ronin Beskar armor. He looks like a samurai. And he's pushing Grogu in a little cart. They love leaning into, to your point, the Japanese influence, the Bushido influence into yep. Star Wars. And like that is a perfect example of they just took Mando and they made it not canon in how his armor and everything. And even Grogu's got this little cute ass top knot and whatnot. And it's like, this isn't canon, but it's adorable as hell.
I think they realize that anime is such a good way for them to tell stories. Yeah. And it's a great audience that's very receptive to the stories they want to tell. And they're going to lean. They apparently greenlit like two or three anime series. I have a feeling it's probably based on stuff from Visions. Visions was probably a gigantic test.
Almost definitely.
It's like, which ones do you like the best? Haha, it's an anthology series. Not anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I don't get a flushed out story for the Ninth Jedi, I will probably be grumpy.
Ninth
because
Jedi,
that was
the
so
duel,
good.
The Elder and Lampinocho, you give me those four, I'm happy. I don't give a shit about any. I could do Akaviri too. Akaviri had a fun story.
If I don't find out what happens to the band on Tatooine Rhapsody, I'm going to be livid.
On that note, thanks for watching listening to Star Wars and Scotch.
It's been fun.
We appreciate
it's a
you.
Good episode.
Almost 60 episodes in the can. That's pretty wild.
It is pretty wild.
And Book of Boba Fett. So we usually close the office at Rare Drop. The week between Christmas and New Year's, but Tim and I are going to have to do an episode.
Yes, we will have to do something for sure.
For Book of Boba.
We also have the Boba Fett show coming out, the one episode that comes out on the 11th of November, right?
Two weeks
from today.
Disney Plus Day, whatever day that is.
November
12th.
November 12th. Okay, so we've got a few weeks from that. So we've got three weeks. 3 weeks until that.
Next.
So we'll dive deep into that. And then
next week, Tim and I are going to dive into Dune. I know that's a departure from Star Wars, but Dune is constantly compared to Star Wars. It's space sci-fi. Tim and I want to try something different and talk about something different. So we're going to dive into Dune a bit, do some comparisons to the books, which I don't think you've read the book, right?
I have not. And so the reason why I came up with this idea is one, I have never read the Dune books. I heard they're phenomenal, but I saw this article that a lot of people were comparing Star Wars to Dune. And the director of Dune said, no, Star Wars was pulled a lot from Dune. So in to be fair to Dune, people should be comparing Dune to Star Wars, not Star Wars to Dune. The other way around. They should be comparing Star Wars to Dune, not Dune to Star Wars. And so I thought it'd be really fun after reading that article. I was like, Kevin, as avid Star Wars fans, as people who just really love this stuff, we should look at Dune, watch the movie, and then compare it to Star Wars and see, like, really, where have they pulled influence from Dune into this universe? So I'm excited to look at it.
Yeah, also, you know, if that goes well, I would love to look at other space sci-fi stuff and you know, kind of do some specials where we draw the low-hanging fruit there again. I've used that phrase like three times
today. You like saying that?
I don't know why. And just today. But it would be Destiny. And bringing on maybe some of our Destiny friends to chit chat about Destiny lore and the influence it has
bring
on
Bife back.
Star Wars. Yeah, we could have Bife. I would say Bife and Ben for that because Ben knows a shit ton about Destiny lore. But we're going to start with Dune next week. We're really excited. I'm so stoked to watch Dune. I'm a huge fan. I read the book years ago. I actually like the 80s movie. So I know some people don't, but I'm down to see how it went. And everything I see online from diehard Dune fans says it is faithful to the source material, very entertaining and very good. So that excites me, and Washington that is what tonight. I'm going to do for 2.5 hours to 3 hours. I think it's almost
it's 2.5 hours. I looked at it this morning on HBO.
2.5 hours after my dinner meeting this evening. So
yeah.
Cool. Thank you so much. Make sure you go check out timfb.gg/darkness429 Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Everything I do, you can check out on raredrop.co. If you want to tweet at me, it's KevinXVision. If you want to Instagram me, it's KMagic101. And if you want to do anything else with Tim, it's Darkness429 everywhere else on the internet.
That's me.
You have a fantastic one. Please rate, review, subscribe on this episode. And we will see you next week when we chit-chat about Dune. Have a good one.
May the Force be with you.
And with you.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.